The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
It's Ask the Lawyer with Mike Connors. Got questions concerning elder or estate law? Attorney Mike Connors has the answer. He was recognized as one of New York's top lawyers by New York Magazine and brings over 30 years' experience to the table. His office number is 718-238-6500. That's 718-238-6500. Here's Mike Connors.
We are gathered here on hallowed ground. Horses raised, heads bowed down.
Welcome to Ask the Lawyer with me, Mike Connors, accompanied by my wife, Beth.
Hi, everybody.
For those of you who don't know about the show's in a couple of different parts. The first part of the show, we talk about estate planning and elder law. And the idea behind estate planning is to pass assets from one generation to the next, paying the least amount in taxes we need to pay legally, avoiding going to court, avoiding probate, and as far as elder law is concerned, trying to save assets from nursing home bills. The second part of the show, we talk about history, politics, religion, and today we're going to be talking a little bit about politics. We're going to have, you know, we live in the Bay Ridge section of Brooklyn, and the congressional district in Bay Ridge is joined with Staten Island. We're supporting Nicole Malliotakis for Congress in that district that represents Staten Island and Bay Ridge, and we're going to have a conversation with Nicole in a few minutes. We're also going to be talking to Molly Hemingway about the Kavanaugh confirmation. Meanwhile, let's get back to estate planning. Beth, we have an email question from Deborah. Can you read that question, please?
I will. What is long-term care insurance? Should one get it? And how much coverage should one get?
If you can afford it, you should get long-term care insurance. Now, it is expensive. If you're over 65 and you want to get long-term care insurance, it's going to cost you $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 a year, and a lot of people on a fixed income can't afford it. And that's why we do some of our Medicaid planning to try to save assets from nursing home bills. But one of the things we can't do, if somebody has a high pension, and a combination of high pension and Social Security, we can't always get rid of income. In fact, it's very hard to get rid of income. So if somebody has a high pension, retired police officer, teacher that's got a lot of money in the TDA where we're making distributions, I strongly recommend you think about long-term care insurance. Now, what is long-term care insurance? Long-term care insurance pays, in many cases, for nursing home bills. And the average cost of a nursing home right now in New York is about $15,000 a month. So if we're going to get long-term care insurance, I strongly suggest you get enough to cover your bill. Now, a lot depends on whether you're single or married and so forth. But here's a question. Let's say you're a police officer. You have a high pension. You go to a nursing home. Can your wife live off her income? And if she can't, maybe you want to buy enough long-term care insurance where she can receive a good part of your income. And remember, you know, and this is where a lot of people make their mistakes in the long-term care insurance. Let's say they get $300 a day coverage. Well, okay, $300 is much better than having nothing. Don't get me wrong. But let's say you've got a $500 a day bill. Can your spouse afford to pay that $200 a day, $6,000 a month? In this case, let's say she can't do it. How are you going to make ends meet? So if you're going to get long-term care insurance, get enough to cover the whole bill. Now, at the other side of the coin is, let's say you're single and you're trying to preserve assets from your children and you're not that worried about saving every single dollar of income or whatever. Well, then $300 a day might be enough with your pension and Social Security if it pays everything. And by the way, those of you who are veterans or widowed veterans, you should look into the programs with the VA. Now, most of your assets have to be in trust for 3 years now, but if you're running out of money or whatever paying bills, the VA will kick in between $1,200 a month to $2,200 a month to pay for the care of either a widow of a veteran or a married veteran toward their nursing home bill if the time comes. And sometimes that $2,200 is just what we need to get over the hump to pay most of the bills. Now, here's one thing. Some people say, well, I'm going to get long-term care insurance. I'm not buying it for nursing home. I want to buy it for home care. Well, that's a good goal, and I wouldn't necessarily discourage you from doing that because it's always better to have some coverage than none. The thing is, in New York, it's very liberal in getting home care Medicaid in New York, and it's not that easy to get nursing home coverage. So I look at long-term care insurance more for the nursing home. At the same time, assisted living, you know, sometimes it's great to have $300 a day for an assisted living bill if the assisted living bill is, let's say, $8,000, $9,000 a month. So if you can afford it, please get long-term care insurance. And I think what happens is, in a lot of cases, you know, you see somebody with a high pension, combination of high pension, Social Security. Let's say the wife has $3,000 a month income from her pension, Social Security. The husband will say was either a school teacher or a police officer or some kind of retired government employee, and he gets $9,000-$10,000 a month in income. Unfortunately, if he goes to a nursing home, the wife's going to have to live off her income, which is only going to be like $3,000 a month. And maybe she can't afford to do that because people are used to spending their incomes. So again, if you can afford long-term care insurance, and if you have a high pension and Social Security combination, you should be able to pay, sell long-term care, or buy long-term care insurance. And believe me, nobody at Connors and Sullivan sells long-term care insurance. You know, if you want, we can get you some insurance, financial planners can get you the policies. But again, if you can afford it, afford it. If you can't afford it, then we start putting their assets in a trust to protect those assets from nursing home bills and so forth. Now, each week, Kevin McCullough takes one of our email questions, and he asks the question on his show, which is broadcast on 570 The Mission, Monday through Friday at 3 o'clock, and 970 The Answer, Monday through Friday at 5 o'clock. And so take it away, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin McCullough. Every week we promise you that Mike Connors of Connors and Sullivan, New York's premier estate care and elder law firm in the New York tri-state area, the premier firm in that regard, will come and answer one of your questions here on Kevin McCullough Radio. And Mike, this week's question is from Ariane. She says, for many years, I paid into a family trust named after my husband. I paid into this trust from a bank account in my name until my husband blindsided me and drained my bank account. My question is, what are my rights in regards to the trust? Mike Connors.
Well, I don't know how the trust is written, so, you know, that's a problem. But in any event, I would think she's married. She certainly can sue for support, divorce, whatever, and that's where her main rights would be. Did he defraud her on the trust? I don't know. Does the trust say she's going to get part of the benefits of the trust? I would think she would if they were married. But it's more a question. She can sue her husband, but maybe she should sue him for divorce if he drains all the bank accounts.
Well, and here's the thing. People set up trusts all the time and probably are told by their spouses or whoever's setting them up that if they pay into this, there's that, and they don't know their actual rights. This is why people need to call Connors and Sullivan and actually have you guys help walk them through the process of exactly what it looks like.
Right. She shouldn't have been depositing money into a trust without knowing what the trust says.
Yeah. Well, friends, don't get caught blindsided like Ariane did, and let's try to find the best help for her that we can. And here's how you do it. You call 718-238-6500, 718-238-6500. The friendly voices at Connors and Sullivan will answer that phone even right now, 718-238-6500. And you can also submit your questions to Mike at askmikeconnors@gmail.com. He'll answer one question each week right here on Kevin McCullough Radio, but he'll answer even more on Ask the Lawyers, Saturday mornings at 8 on AM 570 The Mission, Sunday mornings at 9 on AM 970, The Answer. Mike Connors, thanks so much.
Thanks again, Kevin. We're going to be taking a short break. You're listening to Ask the Lawyer with me, Mike Connors.
For our Ask the Lawyer friends and listeners, you can attend any of Connors and Sullivan's free seminars on elder law, Medicaid, wills and estate planning, and more.
Yes, it's all free and all close to you. So come to Connors and Sullivan's free seminars.
On Tuesday, September 24th at Lenny's Clam Bar, 161-03 Cross Bay Boulevard in Howard Beach at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. On Wednesday, September 25th at 11 a.m., 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. at Connolly's Corner, 71-17 Grand Avenue in Maspeth, and on Friday, September 27th at the Adria, 221-17 Northern Boulevard in Bayside at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m.
Can't go to any Connors and Sullivan's free seminars? Then call Connors and Sullivan at 718-238-6500 for your own free office appointment.
Make an educated decision on your estate and family legal solutions today. Just call Connors and Sullivan at 718-238-6500.
718-638-6500. That's Connors and Sullivan, 718-238-6500, or go to ConnorsandSullivan.com. That's ConnorsandSullivan.com.
Find out what you're entitled to. Come to a Connors and Sullivan free seminar. For more information, call 718-238-6500 or go to ConnorsandSullivan.com.
Connors and Sullivan. Plan now for later.
We all know someone who's been touched by cancer. It's the second leading cause of death, and it took the life of my father, John Wayne. But even in his final days, he was thinking about helping others and publicly campaigning to raise awareness about cancer. His courage and grit inspired our family to do everything we could to fight the Big C, as my dad called it. So we did something about it and founded the John Wayne Cancer Institute 35 years ago to advance life-saving research. Our discoveries are fundamentally changing the way cancer is treated around the world. Cures are within our reach, but we can't do it alone. I'm Patrick Wayne, and I'd be honored if you joined us in the fight against cancer. You can make a lasting legacy by helping to eradicate this deadly disease. Together, we can save lives. To learn more, visit jwcigiving.org. That's jwcigiving.org.
Welcome back to Ask the Lawyer with Mike Connors.
Welcome back to Ask the Lawyer with me, Mike Connors. My wife, Beth, got called away for a few minutes, so we had to get a pinch hitter here in the office. So coming from the on-deck circle right now is, and I'm sorry, Lloyd, how do you say your name? What is your name?
Shuai Zhang. So my Chinese name is Zhang Shuai, if you speak in Chinese.
Okay. So most of our listeners don't. So what do we call you?
Shuai. Call me Lloyd.
You call you Lloyd? Okay. All right. So where did you go to law school? Where did you...
Sure. So I went to law school in China for my Bachelor of Laws degree. And I had extensive training there on Chinese laws. And then in 2015, I came here to get my Master of Laws degree on the international business law. So I also learned a lot about the U.S. legal system. That's when I chose to go on my journey to the Juris Doctor degree. And here I am. I ended up with three law degrees right now.
Why did you decide to leave China and come to the United States?
Yes, that's a fair question. So actually, during my Bachelor of Degrees program, my undergraduate school has a program with the Case Western Reserve University where I got my Master of Laws degree and my Juris Doctor's degree. And that's why I took the opportunity to come to the U.S. to learn the U.S. legal system. One reason is that I really want to be an international law lawyer. That's why I chose to come here. But after I did the one-year program, I found that actually the U.S. law is more interesting than international law. That's why I chose to go for the three-year program. I learned a lot about the U.S. legal system and how the court works, everything. And I'm glad I made the choice to come here.
Let me ask you something. Do you prefer the Chinese system or the American system?
I would say the American system, of
Why?
Course. It's more transparent in some sense than the Chinese legal system. And mostly it's still, it's rule of law instead of, I don't know, you can still say China is not a country of rule of law. And the law here, they are systematic and you have case laws to follow. But in China, case laws are not actually something judges have to follow. It's just the guidance. And here, with those case laws, you can get a better answer, better prediction on your client's case.
All right. In the meanwhile, you have a question that we got through the email, right?
Yes. There's one question from Lisa. So she asked, my friend asked me to serve as his executor. What do I have to do?
Well, that's a good question, and I hope I can answer it in the next few minutes. Basically, if you serve as an executor of the will, your job is to carry out the terms of the will after the person dies. So right away, you really don't have to do anything as executor until the person dies. Now, when the person who chose you as executor dies, then it's your job to follow the terms of the will. Ordinarily, you would get a lawyer to do that. Obviously, that's part of what we do at Connors and Sullivan. The first thing is to get appointed either as executor, preliminary executor, then try to collect the assets. eventually collect all the assets, get the will probated, and then distribute the assets after probate's complete. Maybe you have to sell the house. You got stocks. Maybe you have to sell the stocks. You have to pay the taxes on it. Not that you individually have to pay the taxes on it. You have to get somebody to prepare the returns or whatever. And sometimes it's not that complicated, but sometimes it can be extremely complicated because maybe one of the relatives is going to contest the will. And then this executor's, you could be collecting, holding the assets for years while it's going through court. An executor, you know, sometimes you have a couple of people get along, but if somebody wants to appoint you as executor and you're not an immediate family member, be careful what you're doing because you could be stepping into a hornet's nest. You know, you got two kids on one side, two kids on the other side, you're in the middle, and you're going to try to keep everybody happy, which doesn't always work that well. You could have, a real job that is not going to be, believe me, you don't get paid enough to be executor. Ordinarily, it's roughly about 3% of the estate, unless the estate is worth millions of dollars. And yes, okay, you got $1 million estate, you get paid about $32,000. It goes on a sliding scale downward, and sometimes it can be a lot of headaches for it. Your friend is asking you to do a favor. Obviously, your friend is putting a lot of trust in you. The question becomes, are you willing to do it? And I would say to some extent, well, if you say yes, you have a moral obligation to fulfill those duties. And if your friend does ask you, if your friend needs help, well, I guess that's, you know, you got to ask yourself this question, what are friends for? So it can be a very easy job if everybody gets along and there's not a lot of assets. It can be a very hard job if everybody's fighting, you know, like you got two kids from the first marriage and two kids from the second marriage and they can't get along on everything and you'd be caught in the middle for years. Hopefully your friend appreciates that. What an executor entails depends a lot on what is in the estate. What assets do we need to sell? What assets do we need to collect? What taxes do we need to pay? You know, there are no death taxes now in New York under $5,740,000. But if you're over that amount, sometimes the tax returns can be a little complicated because then you got to figure out where you're going to take your expenses. And it's not always easy. And hopefully at that point, you do get the right advice. Thank you for the question. You're listening to Ask the Lawyer with me, Mike Connors. We're going to be talking to Nicole Maliotakis, who's the representative from the Assembly in the state of New York and representing parts of Staten Island and Bay Ridge. And she's going to be running for the congressional seat against Max Rose a year and change from now, November 2020, in the 2020 elections.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older and are finding it hard to pay off debt, or how about enjoying your retirement years with less stress? A government-insured reverse mortgage may be the answer or might be the perfect solution for you and your family. Hi, this is Frank Melia, a certified mortgage planner. I've been a mortgage specialist for over 20 years, and I've helped countless homeowners all over the tri-state area tap into a little or a lot of their home equity so they can use it right now. This past October, the federal government made changes to the reverse mortgage loan program. Give me a call now so our office can show you how these changes affect how much money you receive and how the annual mortgage insurance costs have decreased. My job is to help you find the best solutions for your retirement goals. I do this by educating homeowners with straightforward information and answers. It's free to call and speak with me, Frank Melia, to determine if this FHA program might be able to help you and your loved ones now. Call and speak with me right now. I'll answer your questions and help you decide if a reverse mortgage is right for you and your family. Make the call now, 888-943-2646, or try me on the internet at www.quanticbank.com/FMelia. Once again, call 888-943-2646, and you could be on your way to a stress-free retirement.
Frank Melia, NMLS number 62591. All loans provided by Quantic Bank, NMLS number 403503.
Hello, this is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. Adult stem cell research is nothing new. It has been going on for decades and, in fact, has proven helpful in treating various diseases. In the process of this research, nobody has to be killed in order to obtain the stem cells. Embryonic stem cell research, on the other hand, only began in 1998 and does involve killing a new human life in order to obtain the cells. The number of diseases that have been successfully treated with embryonic stem cells is zero. They have shown no medical benefit. And even if they did, such activity is immoral. The end does not justify the means. Adult stem cells have treated various forms of leukemia, sickle cell disease, anemia, and carcinoma. Embryonic stem cells have succeeded in nothing. This is Father Frank Pavone, National Director of Priests for Life.
time now for Connor's Corner, where Mike takes a closer look at topics like history, politics, religion, and more. Here's Mike.
Welcome to the Connor's Corner segment of Ask the Lawyer. For the last 8 years or so, I've always lived in Bay Ridge, but for the last 8 years or so, my representative in the New York State Assembly is our next guest, Nicole Malliotakis. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
It's great to be with you, Mike. Thank you.
You're ready to make the next big step. You're going to run for Congress. Why are you going to run for Congress? What are you going to add to the equation?
Well, look, there's multiple reasons. First, I've been in the state assembly now for 9 years. I have a good grasp of the legislative process, and I want to be able to take that to Washington. I think it's very important that New York City has one Republican voice on the federal level. We currently don't have that right now. And so you have members here in New York like Jerry Nadler and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez who are more concerned with impeaching the president than actually doing the work of legislating and trying to get results for the people of this city, particularly when it comes to projects like infrastructure, whether it be federal funding to improve our subway system, whether it be to fix the seawall on Staten Island, which is a project that is being delayed, has been delayed repeatedly. These are all issues that are important to my constituents, and I think that there's an opportunity for me to fight on a more global scale. I think that it's really important that we have representatives who call out and fight back against individuals like those members of the squad. And right now, in this district, the 11th congressional district that encompasses Staten Island and Brooklyn, we have a representative that has been silent, particularly disturbing when you think of, you know, the comments that have been made by these very radical left-wing representatives. For example, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez calling the crisis at the southern border, trying to compare it to Nazi concentration camps. Ilhan Omar, who is just, you know, is spewing anti-Semitic and anti-American rhetoric, blaming the United States for our problems in Venezuela. So I think that it's very important that we have representatives that provide a counterbalance and are willing to push back on those individuals who are trying to move us more to the left, trying to make America a socialist country. And certainly as a Cuban, daughter of a Cuban refugee, that's something that I really am adamant against, and I'm prepared to go to Washington to fight for that. So there's issues, again, it's local issues that I want to fight for, a lot of those issues that I brought up in the mayor's race when I ran against Bill de Blasio. And then there's more issues that are national based, stopping the socialist movement.
Well, let me ask you something. I think you brought up a good point. There are no Republican congressmen, members of Congress from New York City. How does that hurt the city in real terms?
Well, I think in real terms, you know, right now we have a Republican president in the White House, and we have nobody who has a relationship with the White House. In fact, you know, they're going out of their way trying to slander the president. In fact, my congressman, Max Rose, who I'll be running against next year, voted with the squad to condemn the president and say that he's a racist. That is what they're doing instead of actually working with the president to bring federal infrastructure investment to our city, trying to resolve the SALT deduction that is hurting the state of New York, working to hold Mayor de Blasio's education spending, holding him accountable for wasting tons of money, hundreds of millions of dollars that we are seeing across the board. But a lot of that's federal funding, right? We want to make sure that money is being spent properly. And so I think that, you know, we need members of Congress, particularly from New York City, that are not going to just look to investigate, but look to legislate, work with the president, and bring results. You know, being New York City is a sanctuary city, all the members that we have right now in Congress support Bill de Blasio's sanctuary city. I do not. It's one of the reasons why I ran against him for mayor. And I think that that's something that it would make me in contrast to the other members. And we need that type of healthy debate and opposition in Washington.
Talking about sanctuary city, immigration. Now, as you mentioned, you're the daughter of immigrants. I'm the son of immigrants. Do you have any ideas or what should be done about immigration?
Well, look, this has been a crisis now that is growing, but it's been a problem for the last 30 years. And what we really need is a members of Congress who are going to work with the president to secure our borders. I think that's number one. In order to address the immigration crisis that we have, we need to first stem that flow of illegal immigration that is coming to our country. It's not just illegal immigrants who are coming to our country. It's, you know, drug trafficking. It is
gun trafficking. It is human trafficking, sex slaves that are being brought across. In fact, ICE just had a tremendous bust of an American citizen who was smuggling individuals, women, across the border and was using them in the sex trade. They were being drugged and used for sex trade. And that's something that has to stop. And I think that we would all agree that that is the case. But no one wants to actually work with the president to secure our borders, as he has said is so important. You know, I think the other thing is we need to know who is coming in and out of our country. You know, visa entry exit tracking system is important. I believe we should implement E-Verify. I think that there's a number of issues that have to be taken up, and this can all be negotiated. You know, the Democrats want to protect DACA recipients. The president has said he's willing to work with them on that, but we have to resolve all the pieces at the same time. That's what negotiation is. So right now you don't have a House that's willing to work with them, and I think that's extremely problematic.
You said something in the last comment that maybe passed through some people's salt. What are you talking about?
Yeah, so the state and local tax deductions that New Yorkers have had. Now, when the federal tax plan passed, and this was under President Trump, you know, the majority of the state benefits. I mean, the majority of the nation benefits. Why? Because they are low tax states. The states that are not benefiting from this are the ones that are high tax local municipalities and states like ours. Now, that's partly, and I would say mostly, the fault of our local governments, right? So, and as a member of the state assembly, I've been very proud of my record of voting against tax increases. You know, but here in the city of New York, Mayor de Blasio has increased the property tax levy by 50% since he's been in office. And because we have such a high local and state taxes, we now are limited in how much we can write off on the federal level. And so that was done as part of this federal deal. I think that the New York State delegation should be fighting to do two things. One is try to increase our SALT deduction so we can write off more of those state and local taxes on the federal level. But we should also push to see if we can get maybe some federal taxes written off on the state level, as well as, just in general, try to hold our governor and our mayor responsible when it comes to just taxation. As I mentioned, you know, the mayor is driving a runaway train here. He has increased spending significantly. It was a $70 billion budget under Mayor Bloomberg. Now we're talking about $93 billion budget. Think about that. That is a tremendous increase and is one that is unsustainable and is putting a lot of pressure on the middle class in our state, which is why we're seeing so many people flee. When people flee, it affects our tax base, putting more pressure on taxpayers in the city, as well as, you know, we lose population and our representation in Washington. So, I mean, we're set to lose another one, possibly two seats in Congress in the next redistricting, which means that our voice on the federal level will get even smaller.
As a partisan Republican, why is it better that the Republicans are in charge of the Congress and the speakers than the Democrats?
Well, I think for two reasons. One, the current House refuses to work with the president, even on things that they agree needs to be done. So infrastructure, for example, everyone agrees that there's a crisis at the border, but they don't want to work with the president to actually resolve it. I think that, you know, it's important that, well, from our perspective, being that I would be the only Republican voice in Washington, to have that relationship with the White House. And I think that's very important. I've said in the past, look, I'm not going to agree with the president on everything, but for the most part, I do agree with the majority of his policies. And I think that I want to work with him to be able to resolve some of these issues that are pending out there. I think also, you know, I think the future of our country is at stake here. I mean, we're talking about whether we want to continue to preserve the American dream, which is, you know, my parents came here as immigrants. I am the product of immigrants. I can tell you that in one generation, the fact that I'm a candidate for Congress, the fact that somebody like Ilhan Omar, who came here as a refugee and in a matter of years becomes a member of Congress, you know, that's the American dream. And we want to be able to preserve the American dream. And so she should be most appreciative of this country, not be trashing it as she does on a regular basis. But again, I want to preserve the American dream. I don't want to move this country towards socialism, which is what we're seeing from the Democratic side. They are putting immigrants that are here illegally before citizens, whether they're immigrants or American-born. They're still citizens, and they should be our priority, not those who are in our country illegally. And this is something even at the state level we're having here in New York. I mean, we just got into a big battle at the budget because they provided free college tuition for those who are in our country illegally, or a tuition assistance, I should say, for people who are in our country illegally. If you are a household with $81,000 income, you do not qualify for tuition assistance here in the state of New York. So you're giving a benefit to individuals who are non-citizens, who have broken our immigration laws, and yet someone who's been a tax-paying family for perhaps generations that earns $81,000 or more, they don't qualify for the tuition assistance. If you're a graduate student in the state of New York, you don't qualify for any tuition assistance. Backwards priorities. But to make matters worse, a week later, they went into a committee meeting on the state level, and they killed a bill that would have given free tuition, would have covered all the tuition costs for the children of men and women military members who have either were killed or disabled on duty. So think about this. They would give tuition assistance to those who are in our country illegally. They wouldn't give it to the Gold Star family children. And that, to me, is a disgrace. And that's the difference between what we believe and what they believe.
And if somebody wanted to learn more about your campaign, how do they do that?
Well, my website is NicoleForNY.com. Again, NicoleForNY.com. And I would love for people to go check out my campaign. In fact, this is one of the most winnable seats, not only in the state, but in the nation. So this is an opportunity to help flip the House of Representatives by going to NicoleForNY.com, sign up to volunteer, to get my news, to make a donation, whatever they're willing to do, they can do it online at my website. This is a seat, by the way. When I ran for mayor against Bill de Blasio, we received nearly 70% of the vote in this district. So it's a real opportunity for us to take back a seat that has historically been in Republican hands. In fact, since 1981, with only one exception a decade ago, and now. So I thank you, Mike, for having me on and giving me the opportunity to promote my campaign and talk about issues that are important to me and my community.
And here's the thing, for those Republican conservatives outside the district, for the most part, and I don't want to knock any local candidates, but they don't have winnable seats. Here we have a winnable seat. We can get a little bit of a two-party system back in New York if Nicole wins in the next election.
Yeah, and I'm very honored and humbled by the support that I am receiving from across the city. Majority of my contributions are small contributions that are coming from right here in New York. Over 90% of my contributions are coming from within the state. And, I think there are hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers who feel that Mayor de Blasio and those on the left have gone too far to the left, and they do not represent their views. And so even if you're a Democrat, I think it's important to want to have a two-party system representing you in Washington. And right now we don't have that from New York City. We have only one party and one party that refuses to call out AOC, refuses to call out Ilhan Omar, and refuses to put our citizens first. And so I think that I will bring a tremendous voice for those people who feel disenfranchised in our city to the national stage and also from our New York City delegation.
Nicole Malliotakis for Congress. Nicole, thank you for running.
Thank you so much, Mike.
How can I protect my family if something happens to me?
What if I need to go to a nursing home? What will happen to our savings, our home? What's the best way to give my home to my kids?
Who will help us take care of Grandpa?
These and many other questions can be answered with a phone call to Connors and Sullivan Attorneys at Law, PLLC, 718-238-6500. Mike Connors, one of New York Magazine's top lawyers, has over 30 years of estate planning and elder law experience. Mike and his team of professionals will help you protect your assets from probate, taxes, and nursing home costs so you can have peace of mind knowing you and your family will be taken care of and protected.
I'm Mike Connors, founder of Connors and Sullivan. People don't plan to fail, they fail to plan. The time to plan is now.
I'm Beth Connors. Call today for a free initial consultation with one of our experienced lawyers.
Connors and Sullivan in Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, and Staten Island. Call 718-238-6500, 718-238-6500, or connorsandsullivan.com.
I think I just found myself believing that I didn't need God. I just had everything under control, and church was actually a burden to me.
I might have gone to church, at Christmas time, gradually quit going.
No, I didn't take my faith seriously, which probably means I never really got it to begin with.
You can have a beautiful car, a big fancy home, but if you don't have Christ in your life, there's an emptiness that's there.
We are enslaved to power or to greed or to wealth or to lust, especially as a man. But there's a true freedom to not be enslaved, but to attach ourselves to God and to be free. Thank God I'm home.
Now that I'm back in the Catholic Church, I'm a new person. I love it.
There's peace in our home that we didn't have before.
You're coming home to a Catholic family where people today just embrace you.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for whatever reason, we invite you to take another look. Visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
Welcome to Connor's Corner segment of Ask the Lawyer. Our next guest is Molly Hemingway, who co-authored a book titled Justice on Trial, The Definitive Insider's Account of Kavanaugh's Appointment to the Supreme Court. Welcome to Connor's Corner, Molly.
It's great to be here with you.
I guess you did a lot of research on this. And what is the true story behind the accusations against Justice Kavanaugh?
Yes. Well, my co-author, Carrie Severino, and I were kind of heavily involved in the process. I was covering the Kavanaugh confirmation. She was working to advance the nomination. And we interviewed more than 100 people who were associated with the confirmation battle, from the president to Supreme Court justices to senators, people who knew the Kavanaugh family and the Blasey Ford family. And we just kind of lay out everything that's out there, and we report some new details about the allegations. And basically, it's not the one thing that we already knew was that there was no evidence to support any of the allegations. There was a lot of emotional fervor, but no actual evidence in support of the charges. And despite the lack of evidence, some people felt that the allegations were indisputably true or emotionally valid or whatnot. But we just look at what was alleged and what evidence there was in support of it, which was not actually any evidence, but also what evidence was against it. And we just kind of lay it all out.
Okay. So give me an example. Listen, a lot of people still out there believe that Kavanaugh was confirmed under a cloud, that the truth really didn't get out. What would you say to them?
Right. Well, we did not find that to be the case. There was ample time given to substantiate charges against him. And remember, the first charge had no evidence in support of it, but it was at least within the realm of possible. By the end, the charges were in the realm of ludicrous, you know, allegations of serial gang rape, that Brett Kavanaugh led a cartel of rapists who roamed the suburbs of Maryland. There was no evidence in support of it, but that was read into the congressional record as if it were legitimate or credible. The original allegation, the one that caused everything to kind of get derailed, was made by someone who was unable to even demonstrate that she had met Brett Kavanaugh, although they certainly lived in a similar area of the suburbs of Washington, D.C. She claimed her story changed a bit over time, so there were different versions of it, but she claimed that Brett Kavanaugh had attempted to rape her, and she worried that he might even kill her when they were in high school. She said that there were four witnesses to the party in question. All four witnesses said that they had not attended any such party. That includes her lifelong friend, Leland Kaiser, a woman who was a liberal, did not want Brett Kavanaugh on the court, but when asked if she could support this allegation, she said she had never met Brett Kavanaugh. She did not remember any such event. And in fact, she remembered the summer in question quite well. And she remembered driving Christine Blasey around quite a bit. They were very close, and nothing of the sort was in her memory. She also told the FBI that when she said that publicly, that mutual acquaintances of hers and Christine Blasey Ford had encouraged her to change her story, which many people viewed as witness tampering. But we look at everything, like the claim that Christine Blasey Ford had to delay the hearing, the reopened hearing, because she was afraid to fly. Rachel Mitchell, the Republican hired sex crimes prosecutor, looked into that claim and, you know, asked her how she made it out to D.C. Well, she flew. How did she make it out to D.C. when she came every year? She flew. Was she terrified of flying? Yes. So, you know, noted that on her resume, she listed international surf travel as a hobby, which required flying over large expanses of the Pacific Ocean, you know, and that she did this regularly with. So kind of revealing that a lot of the claims that had been made by this person didn't hold up. Rachel Mitchell said that not only was there not enough evidence to get a search warrant against Brett Kavanaugh, there wasn't even enough evidence to get a search warrant. This is just not something that any sex crimes prosecutor would pursue.
The Senate Democrats, what did they believe?
Well, it's hard to know exactly what they believe. For instance, Dianne Feinstein, on the day of the reopened hearing, read that allegation of Brett Kavanaugh being the leader of a gang rape cartel into the congressional record. It's hard to believe she actually believed that. But they took these things seriously. And in fact, all the Democrats on the committee said that those allegations, which came from Michael Avenatti, were so serious that he should remove himself from the process. They had already mostly, almost all of them had come out against Kavanaugh at the time of his nomination. So their complaints or concerns didn't hold as much weight as the concerns of moderate senators who were still considering whether or not to vote for him. But we look into how many of these senators just violated Senate norms and procedures. It's actually not uncommon to hear allegations against nominees for positions, and there's a process by which you can protect the accuser and the accused while you investigate the complaint. Dianne Feinstein is incredibly familiar with this process, but for some reason she circumvented it when this allegation came to her. Rather than putting the complaint through that confidential process, she connected the accuser to a high-profile Democratic attorney known for rolling out public relations campaigns against people accused of sexual assault or sexual harassment. And that was just a very interesting course of action, given that the Senate has procedures that protect accusers.
Christine Blasey Ford, what was her motivation?
We can't speak with authority about her motivation, but we do look at what some of her friends had reported. And you know, we talked to a lot of friends who gave a very nuanced picture of her. They liked her, even if they didn't believe her. They reported that she had an extremely political Facebook page that she scrubbed just before she called the Washington Post in July with the allegations. That this Facebook page, one friend described it as crazy liberal. Not just liberal, but you know how you have some friends who are really into politics one way or the other on their Facebook page, and apparently that's how they would describe her. She was very much in support of abortion, and these are, you know, this might speak to motivation. It's also interesting that the media downplayed these realities when they wrote up her story, pretending that she was apolitical and had no motivation of any kind.
What about the lie detector tests?
Well, we get into lie detector tests, and I personally don't take them altogether that seriously. But if you do, there were reasons for concern about her lie detector test as well. Again, rather than putting the claim through the confidential process and rather than matching with Ford's stated claim that she wanted to not have this go public, the first thing her attorney did was hired a polygraph person, and then they gave those results to the Washington Post. The polygraph that she wrote up had a different version of events than what the Washington Post had put forth, something that a lot of people didn't notice, a slightly different version of who was there at the party. And she passed that polygraph. But we get into this too. It's possible that she believed she was, if you believe polygraphs, which I'm not a big fan of, but if you believe them, it's possible she believed it. She seemed to express a lot of confusion about the polygraph when she was asked about it weeks later, saying she didn't know what day she took it. She didn't know if it was done according to the proper procedures or not. Didn't know if she was videotaped or if they'd had her consent, you know, these types of things. But it was the manner in which they chose to pursue the allegation.
Now, one of the former guests on our show, Dick Morris, said she used to train people how to circumvent lie detector tests. Is that true?
This was a claim that the White House and Senate Judiciary Committee received from an ex-boyfriend, that he had witnessed her train Monica McLean, a woman who happened to be at that second hearing and was one of her quote-unquote beach friends, had trained her how to pass an FBI polygraph. Both McLean and Ford denied that allegation, and so we don't know where that stands, but that was something that an ex-boyfriend had said, along one of the interesting things was the White House and the Senate Judiciary Committee were actually being flooded with negative information about Blasey Ford. The media were painting her as someone beyond reproach, but they were, the Judiciary Committee and the White House were hearing otherwise, but they determined that they couldn't really go public with these claims, in part because the media had taken such dramatic sides against Kavanaugh and that they would destroy anybody who in any way raised any issues with the accuser.
Now, there were other some vague allegations. Any truth to any of those allegations?
There was never any evidence in support of any of the allegations that were made against Kavanaugh, but they got increasingly absurd, and several people were referred for criminal prosecution to the Department of Justice for making false claims. At some point, things just got so out of control that you were hearing that Brett Kavanaugh, federal judge who had passed 6 background checks, had gone on a nationwide crime spree of raping people all across the country, raping people in places he'd never been, on boats off of Rhode Island, in cars in California. There was no evidence in support of these claims, but many of these claims were reported by the media as if they were credible. Which is one of the issues that Carrie and I get into in the book, is what standards there should be for reporting claims when there is no evidence in support of those claims.
The conclusions may be obvious, but why this witch hunt, so to speak?
Oh, well, this is one of the interesting things that we looked at in Justice on Trial, is looking at when such accusations arise. This is not the first time something like this has happened with a Supreme Court nomination. And you look at recent examples of different fights, what we see is when a nomination would change or alter the court in some meaningful way, that's when you start getting some crazy antics. So you saw it with the Bork nomination and Justice Thomas's nomination, but you didn't really see it with Gorsuch, you know, and people say, oh, well, it must have been true about Kavanaugh because the left didn't try this with Gorsuch. Well, Gorsuch was filling the seat left vacant by Antonin Scalia's death. Replacing Scalia with a Trump nominee does not significantly alter the composition of the court. Kavanaugh was replacing Anthony Kennedy, who was a conservative, but someone who swung to the left quite a bit. He was definitely the left's favorite of the conservative justices. So replacing him with a solid Trump nominee was bound to anger progressive groups, and it did. And they said they were going to do everything they could to stop it, and they did. And it's not just this allegation of sexual assault. We actually look at sort of how things began with a lot of craziness and coordination between different groups, how people were paid to come out and get arrested and trained on how to get arrested, had their bail paid, you know, this type of coordination to create a circus-like atmosphere even before these allegations came out.
What you're describing, which a lot of us know, but this is frightening. What do you have any solutions to this?
Well, I think one of the things is you have to hold people accountable for making false allegations. And it's one of the concerns that we express in the book, is that really people weren't held accountable. Senators weren't held accountable for circumventing the processes that are in place. You know, whether it was Cory Spartacus Booker or Dianne Feinstein circumventing the process, those criminal referrals have not been met with prosecution yet. The media gave each other awards for their coverage, even though it was really bad. But what many people expressed concern about in the judicial community is that these types of shenanigans can make it so that you have good people decline to serve in federal courts. And it's not even whether they can handle it, but whether they want to put their family through such horrific, permanent damage to their reputation and their name. And if this is allowed to continue, it will continue. It has happened before, it happened here, and it will almost certainly happen again.
All right. Well, everybody, I guess, should read this book, Justice on Trial, The Definitive Insider's Account of Kavanaugh's Appointment to the Supreme Court. Molly Hemingway, thank you for being on Connor's Corner.
Thank you.
You know, the Kavanaugh story, that is really frightening. I mean, it's hard to believe that those senators could go forward on what they knew was no evidence. But that's why sometimes you need good people in Congress. That's why we're going to be supporting Nicole Malliotakis for Congress in our part of Bay Ridge and Staten Island. Nicole is running for Congress. And we did have a reception at our house a couple of weeks ago. And Beth, you were in charge of the food, which I wasn't very fond of. But you can tell the audience what we served.
Well, we made it fun, you know, and most of y'all know I was born in Louisiana. So you know what? I ordered from Cajun Grocer. an alligator. I cooked a baby alligator. And at the end of the party, there was, you know what? I'll put it on. I'll share it. I'll share it to Ask the Lawyer so then y'all can get on Facebook and you can see a picture of my gator. And I cooked frog legs. And then for dessert, we had pralines. And I made a blueberry cobbler. And then just in case people didn't want to eat the gator, we had an andouille red beans and rice dish. So, I mean, even the gator, I mean, everything was eaten. Even the gator, it was down to the bones. So, hooray! We had a fun time.
Part of that was because State Senator Marty Golden had two helpings of alligator. Which is fine. He could have mine because I'm not that interested in alligators. Really not that good.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Please, a big shout out. Janet Kassar and Linda App. If it had not been for Janet Kassar and Linda App, I would not have gotten through the evening. They helped me throughout the thing. So thank you, thank you. Oh, isn't it nice to have good friends, nice people? We're blessed with that, Mike.
And 2 weeks ago, Mel from our office used to box when he was in college, and I went out to see Jerry Cooney at his book signing. If you haven't gotten Jerry Cooney's book, Gentleman Jerry, take a look at it because he's really a very nice guy. You know, he's a giant of a man. He's 6'7", but he couldn't be a nicer guy. Really, and not just us, but everybody who was there. And he runs a charity helping kids learn how to box or whatever, keep them off the streets. And so, Chris, maybe we get Jerry back on in a couple of weeks and we'll talk about that charity.
Sure, we'll give him a call.
Okay, so.
Hooray!
Now, how does somebody like us on Facebook, Chris? And why?
They can just go on Facebook where the page that says Ask the Lawyer with Mike Connors will be found. There's a little thumbs up button with the word like on it. If that's clicked, then you like the page. You like it because you want to see what's going on here, what Mike Connors is doing with the show, what's happening, what our future guests are, some of the past interviews, and seminars that are coming up with Connors and Sullivan.
And you want to see a picture of my gator.
That's right, the gator picture.
I'll put the gator picture on Mr. Connors as the lawyer.
So see you later, alligator.
Another shout out to Ron Hunt. Chris, we got to get Ron Hunt back on the show soon.
That'll
he was
fun.
Up to New York to throw out the first pitch at one of the games against the Washington Nationals or whatever. And, you know, he's still got some stories left in the tank or whatever. So Ron Hunt, you know, his son made a very interesting observation. His son used to play college baseball and then played somewhat in a few years in the minors. And he said the difference between him and his father, he liked playing baseball. His father studied the game. His father was a student of the game. And that's why a guy with very limited talent was able to, you know, play 12 years in the major leagues and had one of the highest on-base percentages of any second baseman in the history of baseball. If he's playing today, who knows how much money he would make. Back then, people only looked at batting averages and home runs, and nobody looked at on-base percentage. But Ron Hunt retired with an on-base percentage of .368. As Bill James said, he was the worst hitter in the history of baseball who ever had a .400 on-base percentage for a season. Well, I guess it's time to end up the show this week. David Kincaid is telling us it's time to go home. Thank you for listening to Ask the Lawyer. Again, if you want to learn anything more about estate planning, you know, hang in at the end and Matt will give you the dates for our seminars upcoming in the end of September.
Well, bye-bye, everybody.
We're gathered here on hallowed ground to sing this soul away. We are gathered here on hallowed ground, voices raised, heads bowed down. We're gathered here on hallowed ground to sing this soul away.
We are gathered here
on hallowed ground, voices raised, heads bowed down. We're gathered here on hallowed ground to sing this soul away.
For our Ask the Lawyer friends and listeners, you can attend any of Connors and Sullivan's free seminars on elder law, Medicaid, wills, and estate planning, and more.
Yes, it's all free and all close to you. So come to Connors and Sullivan's free seminars.
On Tuesday, September 24th at Lenny's Clam Bar, 161-03, Cross Bay Boulevard in Howard Beach at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. On Wednesday, September 25th at 11 a.m., 3 p.m., and 7 p.m. at Connolly's Corner, 71-17 Grand Avenue in Maspeth. And on Friday, September 25th,
27th at the Adria, 221-17 Northern Boulevard in Bayside at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m.
Can't go to any Connors & Sullivan's free seminars? Then call Connors & Sullivan at 718-238-6500 for your own free office appointment.
Make an educated decision on your estate and family legal solutions today. Call Connors & Sullivan at 718-238-6500 or go to connorsandsullivan.com. Plan now for later. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Connors & Sullivan Attorneys at Law, PLLC.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.